Hare Krishna. So today morning we are discussing the last of these four verses that describe Lord Krishna's remembrance of the gopis. The context here is Uddhava is asking some final instructions from Krishna, and Krishna through various modes of analysis establishes bhakti as the best means for perfection. And here in the preceding verses Krishna has given various examples of how souls who were relatively unqualified attain perfection through bhakti. And in these four verses, when he's describing the gopis, when he comes to the example of the gopis, he does not just mention that example as he has done for many previous devotees. He elaborates because he has such an intimate loving relationship in his form as Krishna with the gopis. So in the previous three verses, the first verse talked about how Krishna appreciated the sacrifice of the gopis. When even after he left them, they continued to love him. Then in the next verse, he talks about how the gopis, they cared for nothing except Krishna, and everything seemed, a time seemed to be like a moment when they were with Krishna, and seemed like infinity when they were away from Krishna. Then he says in the previous verse that the gopis attained the same perfection as they were as absorbed in him as the greatest yogis may be absorbed. And in this verse, now he gives a further point. He's talking about how the gopis were unaware of his supremacy. So Krishna, the title of the chapter is Beyond Knowledge and Renunciation. So usually Jnana and Vairagya are considered to be very important on the spiritual path. And usually Jnana and Vairagya are said to go together. If we acquire Jnana, here Jnana is sometimes simply translated as knowledge. But in the Vedic philosophical context, when we use the word karma, Jnana and Bhakti, that Jnana refers to philosophical knowledge about the nature of reality. And that Jnana leads to Vairagya. You know, the modern scientific knowledge that we have, in a general sense, we can call it Jnana. But within this technical classification of karma, Jnana and Bhakti, scientific knowledge is actually karma. Why? Because the principle of karma is how I can enjoy the material world better. Okay, in karma kanda, one does various religious rituals by which one can enjoy the material world better. Now, in science, one uses the intellectual faculty, but the primary purpose is what? So that one can better control, better manipulate, and better enjoy this world. So, philosophical knowledge of Jnana leads to Vairagya. But today, most of scientific knowledge is used to increase one's attempts to enjoy the material world. So, the Jnana, which in the tripartite classification of karma, jnana and bhakti is there, that jnana refers to the knowledge about the nature of the world, and that knowledge leads to vairagya. So in the previous verse, Krishna has talked about how the gopis were as good as the sages, Munaya, who had renounced the world. So they did not have vairagya, but still they had the absorption that even the vairagis aspire for. And in this verse, Krishna emphasizes that they did not have jnana also. Normally, Jnana is very important on the spiritual path. So, here he says that they did not have Jnana. And yet, Brahmama Paramam Prapahu, they attained me, the Supreme Brahman. So, here Krishna in these two ways, that even in the absence of Vairagya and Jnana, bhakti can give one perfection. That is what the emphasis is being made. Bhakti is the superlative path for attaining spiritual perfection. So, today I'll discuss two, three points. The first point is, what was the gopis' understanding of Krishna? The Vrajavasis, their understanding of Krishna was that he is simply the most lovable Vrajavasi. The gopis were not ignorant, they were transcendent. That means there is sometimes, let me say, the gopis did not know that Krishna is God. And some person we go on the street, he also doesn't know Krishna is God. But the difference is the gopis, the people on the streets, they are in ignorance. The gopis are in transcendence. What that means is, a normal transcendence is to go beyond material attractions and to be situated on the transcendental platform. But one of the words used to describe Krishna is Parat Paratattva. He is not just Paratattva, he is Parat Paratattva. He is transcendental to transcendence. In this analysis, the three modes comprise material nature. Above them is transcendence, that is Brahman. And above that is Krishna. So Krishna is Parat Paratattva. He is transcendental to transcendence. So within that transcendental to transcendence manifestation, Krishna as the Supreme Lord does not delight in his Godhood. Krishna delights in the reciprocation of love. And for the reciprocation of love, he conceals his Godhood so that love can flow unimpeded. Aishwarya Shithila Prema Na Ishwara Bhujai. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that when one is aware of God's greatness, then at that time, the awareness of God's greatness inhibits one's love for Krishna. But when one becomes aware, when one forgets that, just like, say, if somebody is the president of the country, or the prime minister of the country, everybody has a respectful attitude toward that person. Now, if that same head of state has a mother, for the mother, he is first her son. Afterwards, he may be the head of the state. So, when there is an intimate relationship, the whatever public position might be there, that is not considered very important. And if the public position, if say there are two people who are friends, and then one of them becomes the prime minister of the country, then naturally that old friend will not deal with the person who has now become the prime minister in the same way that he had earlier dealt with. Because now, that knowledge, he's such a big person, that will inhibit. But on the other hand, if the president, if the head of the state is a very sociable person, if he may feel that, everyone is being so reverential to me, I want to have some friendly relationship with someone. And he will tell a friend, forget that I am the prime minister, just treat me like a friend. So Krishna is like that. Krishna, he is God, but he doesn't delight in his Godhood. He doesn't say that, I am God, all of you bow down to me. And all that you have to do, all of eternity in my kingdom is bow down to me. No. Krishna wants his devotees to love him uninhibitedly. And that's why in the spiritual world, he conceals his Godhood. And the agency that is used for concealing his Godhood is Yogamaya. The word Yogamaya is an oxymoron. Oxymoron is an English figure of speech or English literary device, in which two opposite words are brought together to convey some meaning. If I say that, he's a intelligent fool. What does that mean? It means, he's an intelligent person, but presently is acting foolishly. Or they say suicide is an act of courageous cowardice. What that means is, actually to end one's life requires some courage. Even soldiers who go to fight on the war, they require courage. But when one ends one's life because one is frustrated and unable to cope with the problems of life, that is cowardice. So, when two contradictory words are brought together to convey some deeper meaning, then that is called an oxymoron. Now, if we normally see Maya is that which makes us forget Krishna, and Yoga is that which connects us with Krishna. So, what is Yoga Maya then? That is an oxymoron, two opposite words brought together. So what is Yoga Maya? Yoga Maya is actually that energy which makes us forget, or makes the exalted devotees forget Krishna's Godhood, so that they can love him uninhibitedly. So Yashoda Mai, she does not see Krishna as God. She sees him as her beloved child. And she thinks that if I don't feed him milk, then he will starve, he may even die. If I don't discipline him, he will become a spoiled child. So there, this is not ignorance. This is transcendence. They are exalted devotees, the Vrajavasis. They know Krishna is God. but they have transcended that knowledge. Krishna has arranged through yoga maya. So just like I said earlier, that this prime head of state may say, forget that I am the prime minister, just be like a friend with me. Now still that friend may find it difficult. How can I forget that you are the prime minister? So Krishna doesn't just tell his devotees, forget that I am God. He arranges through an energy, yoga maya, to subject them to a transcendental illusion by which they forget his godhood. Now his forget, their forgetting his godhood is intriguing. And this is seen in the Gopi Gita, when the gopis in Krishna, chapters 29 to 33 is the Rasa Panchadhyaya. Chapters 29 describes how Krishna calls and the gopis come to meet him. Chapter 30 describes how after some conversation the gopis, Krishna disappears from the gopis. And the gopis frantically search everywhere for Krishna. And when they cannot find him, chapter 31 describes how the gopis sing the Gopi Gita, desperately begging Krishna to appear. So in one of the Gopi, in the whole Gopi Gita, actually this simultaneous awareness and unawareness of Krishna's divinity, this plays out. So in one of the verses in the Gopi Gita, the gopis say that Trunacharanugam Shriniketanam Panipanarpitam Te Padambujam. So this says Trunacharanugam, says that your lotus feet, you are the Supreme Lord, but these feet follow those who are Trunachara, those who are the eaters of grass, that is the cows. Since you are the servant of the cows. And then they say in a poetic way, Fani Fanar Pitam. Fani is a serpent with fangs. So that is Kaliya. So you offered those lotus feet to Kaliya. Fani Fanar Pitam. So Krishna actually smashed Kaliya's head, Kaliya's hooves with his feet. But say you offer those feet, and then they are asking, Krishna, you offer the feet, you offer your feet to the cows, you offer your feet to Kaliya, why don't you offer your feet to us? Why are you away from us? So here, they are exhibiting awareness that Krishna has defeated Kaliya. But just in the next few verses later, they say, Kalila tam manaha kanta gachati nalina sundaram natate padam shila trunankurai sidati tina. They say that Krishna, you want to leave us and go away? That is not causing us as much agony. It is breaking our heart. But what is causing us even greater agony is that we are thinking when you are in the forest, you are bare feet. And when the twigs, the thorns, the pebbles, they pierce your feet. You know, when they pierce your feet, that thought is ripping our hearts apart. So please, Krishna, come back so that we can nurse your feet. So here we see the gopis, if Krishna has survived and subdued the formidable fangs of Kaliya, how can Krishna be hurt, Krishna's feet be hurt by the pebbles? So Acharya described that the gopis, for them, Krishna's divinity is a background awareness. Just like in the daytime, even in the daytime, the stars are there in the sky. But because the sun is so bright, the stars can't be seen. Similarly, for the gopis, they have in their consciousness the stars of the knowledge of Krishna's divinity. That is the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Brahman. But the sun of their intimate affection for Krishna, their amorous love for Krishna, that sun is so strong, so bright, that the stars are like eclipsed. So the gopis, Krishna's divinity is not in the foreground of their awareness. Although it is there, it is not that they are ignorant. And when the circumstances come, they will pray and they will pray eloquently, remembering how Krishna is God. But that is not the mode of their relationship with Krishna. The mode is of amorous love, of intimate affection. In the mood of a lover and a beloved. So, Aswarupa Vidaha, as it is said over here, it says, they did not know my Swarupa. They did not know that I am the Supreme Lord. Now, interestingly, our Acharyas, especially Jiva Goswami, in his Gopal Champu, and subsequently in books like Sangeet Madhava, Prabhudan Saraswati and others, they analyze how there were many different gopis. So the there are different understandings of who the gopis are, because the fact that the gopis were apparently married to someone else, that creates a lot of confusion. And is it that God is sanctioning immorality? God is not just sanctioning immorality, because Krishna played the flute and invited the gopis. So is it God who is asking people to be immoral? What is going on here? So in the tradition, different within different Puranas and different places, different explanations have been given. So Madhvacharya, for example, says that the gopis were Devakanyas. Devakanyas means they were like swargaps, they were like the damsels from heaven, Apsaras and others. And they were attracted towards Krishna with lust. And the Apsaras in the heavens, they are meant to serve the Devatas in a particular way. So they are just like we have Urvashi was attracted to Arjuna. When Arjuna went to the heavens, she was attracted to Arjuna and she propositioned Arjuna. Arjuna refused. And Urvashi got angry and cursed Arjuna that you will become a eunuch because you have refused to act on your manliness. So the point is that the Apsaras, they often have strong desires. And Madhvacharya says that the gopis were Apsaras. And when they saw Krishna's beauty, they were attracted to him. This is true, but it is a partial truth. That means that our acharyas explained that there were many different kinds of gopis. Some gopis were Devakanyas. Some gopis were Munichari gopis. Munichari gopis means that they had been sages in Ramlila. And when they had been sages in Ramlila, at that time, when they had seen Sita and Ram performing intimate pastimes in the forest, they had become attracted. And they had said, "Oh Lord, we also want to serve you." So the Lord had told them that in future, when I will descend, I will accept you. So those sages had now come as gopis. Some gopis, in this way, some gopis were Devakanya, some were Munichari gopis. Some gopis were sadhakas, who after practicing sadhana for many lifetimes had got the fortune of being born in the place where Krishna would descend. And it is described that when the Rasalila was performed, when Krishna played his flute and called the gopis, some of the gopis' family members did not allow them to go. When those family members restricted the gopis from going, those gopis felt so separation from Krishna so intolerable that in their hearts they went so deep in the remembrance of Krishna that they left their bodies. Left their bodies not just in the sense of their consciousness leaving their bodies, but they literally abandoned their bodies. And they immediately got spiritual bodies and they went in spiritual bodies to participate with Krishna's pastimes. So these were the gopis who were sadhakas. They were almost near perfection, and whatever residual impurities were there, when they shed their bodies, they became free from purity, from those impurities, and they attained the eternal association of Krishna. And of course, there were gopis who were eternal associates of Krishna. And those gopis had descended with Krishna from the spiritual world, and they participate fully in Krishna's pastimes. So like that, there are four broad categories of gopis: the Devakanyas, the Munichari gopis, the Sadhakas, Sadhana Siddha gopis, and the Nitya Siddha gopis. Now, in this verse, when Krishna says, "Aswarupa Vida," they did not know about my divinity. So, how this we understand that if we consider that this is applying to the Nitya Siddha gopis, then it means that they were not aware that I am the Param Brahman. That means they were not at that time consciously aware. I explained how Yoga Maya covers their knowledge. But this can also refer to the Devakanya gopis, Devakanyas. They did not know that Krishna is God. They are simply attracted to Krishna because he is so attractive. Now, in the 7th canto, it is described that there are different modes in which one may become attracted to Krishna. Gopya kamad bhayat kamso Vaishyachaidyadaya nrupaha. Like that, a list is given. The different people, the gopis were attracted out of kama. Bhayat, Kamso. Kamsa was constantly thinking about Krishna out of fear. Then Shishupchaidyadaya. Chaidya was the descendant of the king of the Chedar dynasty, that was Shishupal. Vaishya, he was thinking about Krishna out of envy. And Narad Muni, when instructing Yudhishthira Maharaj, says that whichever way one thinks about Krishna, just the thinking about Krishna will lead to purification and perfection. The context for this discussion is that during the Rajasuya Yajna, when Shishupal had blasphemed Krishna for more than 100 times, Krishna had performed a bloodless surgery. You know, he had decapitated him without the spilling of any blood, because the spilling of blood would have spoiled the sanctity of the sacrifice of the Rajasuya Yajna. But although he deserved to be killed, Shishupal, for what all that he had done, still Yudhishthira Maharaj observed that a shining spiritual light came out of the body of Shishupal and it entered into the body of Krishna. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, later when Narad Muni comes to meet him, he asks him that how is it that Shishupal, who was always envious of Krishna, how did he attain perfection? And in that context, Narad Muni is explaining that actually thinking about Krishna is always auspicious. Whatever way one thinks about Krishna, that is auspicious. And in that connection, he used the example that Shishupal thought out of fear. Shishupal thought out of envy, Kamsa thought out of fear, and the gopis thought out of lust. So that means that Krishna is all pure and he is all purifying. So whatever way we think about Krishna, that will take us closer to Krishna. Prabhupada gave the example of how this works. Now Prabhupada says in a lecture that if somebody is alcoholic and that person cannot give up alcohol, I have to drink alcohol. Prabhupada says if such a person thinks that Krishna says that I am the taste of water. What rasoham apsukam deya, he says in 7.8 in the Gita. So if somebody thinks that actually when Krishna says I am the taste of water, what it means is somebody may say actually according to science water is a tasteless liquid. So what do we mean by the taste of water? So here Krishna is talking about something not in terms of our ordinary experience. Although we can, when we drink water and feel relief, we can think this is Krishna giving me relief. But in a metaphysical sense, what Krishna is referring to is that different objects among the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, each of them is associated with a particular sense object. So earth is associated with fragrance. So fire is associated with sight and form. Like that, water is associated with taste. So when Krishna says that I am the taste of water, what he means is that actually the capacity for tasting, which enables us to enjoy things through the tongue, that capacity for taste is imbued in objects by him. So Prabhupada says that if a drunkard is drinking alcohol and the person cannot give up drinking of alcohol, that person says that if that person thinks, oh, this taste of alcohol is Krishna, then Prabhupada says, by just thinking like this, one day the alcoholic will become a great devotee of Krishna. Now, what does this mean? You know, we say, we have to give up alcohol. We have to give up alcohol. And now, if I think that the taste of alcohol is Krishna, will that take me to Krishna? See, there are two different things. One is the perception, and the second is the intention. The perception, a devotee should perceive Krishna everywhere. That means even if we see people performing sinful activities, we can think, you know, that they are attracted to a particular activity, particular sense object, whatever it is that is making them sinful activities. No, the attractiveness of the sense object is actually Krishna. Krishna says that the attraction of everything attractive comes from me, yadyadme bhuti matsattvam. So, all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from a spark of my splendor. So a devotee should be able to perceive Krishna everywhere. So for example, if you see people mad after cricket, then we need to understand that why are they mad like this? Because for them, a spark of Krishna's splendor. Sometimes there's some cricketer, you know, millions of people become fans of that cricketer. You may say, just ordinary human being, why are you going mad after him? So actually, for them, by that cricketer's karma and by these fans' desires, they are perceiving a spark of Krishna's splendor through that cricketer. And that's why they're so irresistibly captivated towards him. So a devotee in this way, whatever people are attracted to, one can perceive Krishna over there. That's perception. But we have to differentiate perception from intention. Intention means that, yes, the taste of alcohol is also Krishna. But that is only a spark. See, Prabhupada writes in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that the jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness extends everywhere. So Krishna is transcendental, but in this world he can manifest in goodness, he can manifest in passion, he can manifest in ignorance. That means some people are very learned, very gentle, very sober. Their overall life is in goodness. And people get attracted to that. So that means through them, Krishna is manifesting a spark of his splendor in goodness. There are some people in ignorance, just, you know, if there's this WWF World Wrestling Competition, you know, the people just do all sorts of crazy things over there. And it is a show because it is not even a show. That means, it's just ridiculous things happen over there. But millions of people are attracted to that kind of wrestling. So why? It's tamasic. So there, it is Krishna who is manifesting, a spark of Krishna's splendor is manifesting in ignorance. Now, we have to know that Krishna himself is transcendental. And the intention of a sadhaka should be to move towards transcendence. The intention of a sadhaka should always be to move towards transcendence. So if somebody thinks that the taste of alcohol is Krishna, therefore I will keep drinking alcohol, then that person will stay in ignorance. But if a person understands that, oh, this thing which is attracting me so much, it's actually a spark of Krishna's splendor. And the spark is so attractive, how much more attractive will the whole be? So let me try to become attracted towards the whole, not towards the spark. But whatever attraction is there towards the spark, even if I am not able to give it up. Some attractions may be sinful also. But still, even within that sinful indulgence, yeah, this is actually a spark of Krishna's splendor that is attracting me. But, see, everything comes from Krishna, but everything doesn't take us to Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna, but everything doesn't take us to Krishna. What does that mean? That all the objects in this world, ultimately their source is Krishna. But whether those objects, by thinking about them, by interacting with them, whether our consciousness will go towards Krishna or not, that will vary. So we, in a philosophical sense, recognize that Krishna is the source of everything. But it is not that, some people may ask, you know, yes, the beauty of beautiful objects is created by Krishna. Yes, but if I get consumed in that beauty, am I going towards Krishna? Somebody may say that, somebody may argue that there are this many kinds of strange people. Some people say that, you know, they rationalize, nowadays there is a lot of pornography, and some people rationalize it saying that actually, very distorted rationalization. They say God has made the human beings beautiful, so why should we conceal the beauty that God has made? But the question is, okay, God has made everything, but thinking of that, does that remind you of God? It doesn't. So, the point is, everything comes from Krishna, but everything doesn't take us to Krishna. So, if anything attracts us, we recognize in the intellectual sense that the attractiveness of this comes from Krishna. But we should focus on those attractive manifestations which take our thoughts towards Krishna. So, Prabhupada writes in the CC purport that the impersonalist may say that actually wine is also Brahman. Yes, wine is also Brahman, but wine is a manifestation of Brahman that will keep you away from Brahman. That will not take us towards Brahman. So, we need to. So for example, some devotees may speak very eloquently, and sometimes a non-devotee may also speak eloquently. So, now we need to know that the capacity to speak eloquently comes from Krishna. But if some atheist speaks eloquently, by hearing that atheist speech, although the atheist's ability to speak is coming from Krishna, by appreciating that ability, by getting persuaded by that message, I will go away from Krishna. So our focus should not just be that everything comes from Krishna. In terms of perception, we see the connectedness of everything with Krishna. But in terms of intention, we focus on going towards Krishna. And accordingly, we focus on those manifestations, those attractive manifestations in this world, which take us towards Krishna. So here, the point is that the gopis, some of the gopis, they may have been attracted to Krishna, kamad, in terms of ordinary lust. That may have been their initial intention in approaching Krishna. Now, if they stay at that platform itself, that becomes a problem. But if initially they were attracted because of lust, but if after that they say, oh, this Krishna is so attractive, and Krishna, the other gopis, they are so absorbed in Krishna, and gradually by that focus on Krishna, they start becoming absorbed in Krishna. And their mode, they don't see Krishna primarily as an object for their gratification, but by their focus on Krishna, their worldly desires get purified, and they develop the desire of wanting to love and serve Krishna in a pure, selfless way. This is what happened to Kubja. Initially, when she saw Krishna, he was such a lovable boy. And not only was he a lovable boy, but earlier I was so ugly, he has given me a lovable form also. She says, I want to serve you. She was a society girl. She wanted to serve Krishna in a particular way. Krishna accepted her intention and then purified her. So even if one is attracted to Krishna out of lust, if one does not use that to rationalize and perpetuate one's lust, then one can become purified. The Sahajiyas, many of them, the problem is that they prematurely trespass into advanced devotional emotions. That means they think that we are actually at the same level as the gopis. And Krishna will perform pastimes with us. So what the sometimes Sahajiyas do is, a man and a woman, they start hearing Krishna's pastimes together. And they have their own concocted belief that when we become absorbed in hearing about Krishna, actually, if we are hearing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, Krishna will enter into the man's body, Radha will enter into the woman's body. And when the man and the woman enjoy, it is Radha Krishna enjoying through them. It's complete distortion. Acharyas have been very, very firm in condemning this. So what happens? In principle, even if one is attracted to Krishna with lust, still one can become purified. But when one understands Krishna's transcendence and gradually tries to give up lust, but if one tries to perpetuate the lust, then it is a problem. It's a serious problem then. If one tries to, so there is the material platform, there is a transcendental platform. And even if you are attracted to Krishna at the material level, if you follow the process of purification, we will go to the transcendental level. So Dhruva Maharaj, initially when he came to Krishna, he came with a purely material motivation. He wanted wealth. But because he practiced the process of bhakti, he became purified. Whereas, if the Sahajiyas, if they don't practice the process of bhakti, and they imagine that we are at the transcendental level, while they are at the material level, then they become bound. Not only bound, they become degraded actually. So that's why our acharyas are very careful that yes, even through lust one can approach Krishna. But when Prabhupada was asked that, you know, if we read the intimate pastimes of Krishna, even in Krishna book, Prabhupada has given some intimate pastimes. So should we read those pastimes? So Prabhupada's answer is practical. You read them, and if you get agitated, that means you're not ready. Don't read them anymore. So yesterday evening I was explaining how the Radha-Krishna relationship is the reality. And the world, male-female attraction in this world is a reflection. So for the exalted devotees, when they see the reflection, Rupa Goswami says, just as a boy is attracted to a girl and a girl is attracted to a boy, my dear Lord, let me be attracted to you. So for them, when they see the reflection, they are reminded of the reality. But for us, when we see the reality, we are reminded of the reflection. So if we are philosophically convinced, this is the reflection and that is the reality. Then, if we then hear about the reality, then we will, oh, this reality is so sweet, so beautiful. Then hearing about the reality will detach us from the reflection. And the Bhagavatam says, if we hear faithfully about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, then lust will go away from our heart. But that will happen when we truly understand that is the reality, this is the reflection, then attraction of the reality will bring detachment from the reflection. But if that basic philosophical conviction is not there, then hearing about the reality will remind us of the reflection and that will make us agitated. Therefore, we have to be practical. We cannot say that I can approach Krishna through my lust. No. We have to ultimately recognize that we have to give up lust to approach Krishna. But whatever captivation happens through lust, we should recognize this is also because the spark of Krishna's splendor is manifesting over here. Then this, I'll conclude with this point. This we see most beautifully in the 8th canto, in the 12th chapter, I think, where Lord Shiva is bewildered by Mohini Murthy. Actually, for Lord Shiva is a great saint, is a great devotee, and not only is a great devotee, is the worshipable Lord for many, many sages. And Mohini Murthy, when Lord Shiva starts chasing after her, Mohini Murthy deliberately runs through the assembly of sages who are devotees of Lord Shiva. And you know, all the sages are horrified to see, you know, what is our Lord doing? He's running after a woman. And then finally, when Lord Shiva comes back, he loses his energy and then he sobers up. Now at that time, his reaction is not, oh, you know, why did you humiliate me like this? He says, he actually glorifies the Lord. He says, my dear Lord, so great is your potency that nobody could have deluded me, but you deluded me. Therefore, I bow down to you. That means, what happens over here? Even when he is put into illusion, even when he is dragged away by Maya, he doesn't forget Krishna. This falling down to Maya is also a demonstration of how powerful Krishna's Maya is. So when Maya attracts us, it is Krishna's Maya. Mama Maya Adurateya. But that is, so we will always be attracted to Krishna. Prabhupada says that everybody is dancing in Rasleela. In one sense, everybody is dancing in Rasleela. Some people are dancing under Krishna's Yoga Maya. Some people are dancing in Mahamaya. But those who are dancing in Mahamaya, they are not enjoying Rasa. They are becoming rascals. So Prabhupada says, those who imitate Rasleela prematurely, they are not doing Rasleela, that is rascal Leela. So, what? as devotees, if we are attracted irresistibly by some sense object, you know, Krishna, this is also actually a spark of Krishna's splendor manifesting through that sense object. But this manifestation will take me away from Krishna. So, even amidst temptation and even amidst fall down because of temptation, a devotee can be Krishna conscious. That's what Lord Shiva demonstrates. Of course, that is not the favorable way to be Krishna conscious. That is the unfavorable way to be Krishna conscious. It's best to be Krishna conscious through the direct manifestations of Krishna. Asurupa Vida. Even those gopis who are not aware of Krishna's divinity, even they, by their attraction to Krishna, became purified by that attraction to Krishna, and eventually they also attained Krishna. Brahma Mam Prabhu. They attained the supreme perfection. This is the meaning in a very inclusive sense of Yena Kena Prakarena Mana Krishna Niveshu. Somehow or the other fix the mind on Krishna. And of course, somehow or the other doesn't mean in a way that increases our contaminations, but it stresses the principle that connection with Krishna is always auspicious. And we strive in whatever way we can. There is a standard process given by our acharyas and we follow the process. But along with that, we also think of ways in which we can increase our remembrance of Krishna. So if we have a particular thing that we are attracted to, some people are very attracted to novels, some people are very attracted to video games, some people may be very attracted to sports, whatever it is. No, we can try to philosophically analyze and contemplate how my attraction to this object is actually an attraction to Krishna. But this is a partial fragmental manifestation of Krishna's attractiveness. Let me redirect this towards Krishna. And in that way, even in our Krishna unconsciousness, we can infuse Krishna consciousness. So I'll summarize. I started by talking about what do we mean when we say the gopis did not know about Krishna's divinity. So first I talked about the liberated eternal associate, Nitya Siddha Gopis, that Krishna is a God who conceals his Godhood so that love can reign supreme. So that love is not inhibited by the awareness of Krishna's greatness. This is a head of state may want a friend to relate as a friend and not as a citizen. And for that purpose, Krishna uses the energy of Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya is an oxymoron which conveys, normally Maya causes forgetfulness, Yoga and Yoga brings connection with Krishna. But Yoga Maya is that divine energy which causes forgetfulness of Krishna's divinity so that the connection at the level of intimacy is intensified. So, we discussed further about how the Aswarupa Vidha, it can mean other things also. There are four broad kinds of gopis: the Devkanyas, the Munichari gopis, the Sadha Siddha gopis, and the Nitya Siddha gopis. So, for the Devkanyas, those who were attracted because of lust towards Krishna, they did not know of Krishna as God, but still they also became purified. And in that connection, we discussed how whatever attracts us, be it in goodness, passion, or ignorance, that attractiveness of that object comes from Krishna. And if we remember Krishna while being attracted to that object, we will become purified. So Prabhupada says, drunkard, if we remember that the taste of alcohol is Krishna, will go towards Krishna. But for that to happen, we need to differentiate between perception and intention. Perception means a devotee should be able to perceive Krishna's hand, Krishna's attractiveness in anything attractive in this world. But the intention should not be to stay attracted to that fragmental manifestation of Krishna. The intention should be to get attracted towards the whole. And with that intention, we try to regulate. And eventually, if required, if that particular attraction is anti-devotional, to eliminate it. And though the Sahajiyas, unfortunately, they try to, what they are getting attracted to at the material level, they try to perpetuate that, imagine that itself to be transcendental. So, Krishna's pastimes, the gopis are the reality, they are the real mango. And the male-female activities in this world are like the reflected mango. So, if we hear with proper philosophical understanding that this is a reality and this is a reflection, then this is a wise person will stop chasing after a reflected mango and move towards the real mango. Like that, we will become detached from the worldly male-female attraction and become attracted towards Krishna more and more. But if you are not philosophically convinced, then seeing the reality, we equate it with the reflection and we become attracted to the reflection. So if we become sexually agitated by hearing Krishna's pastimes of the gopis, we don't hear them. We can hear other pastimes by which we gradually become purified. And as we follow the process of purification, then gradually their conviction will come more and more. And then we can steadily hear the esoteric pastimes of Krishna also. But by knowing that whatever attracts us in this world, it manifests a spark of Krishna's all attractiveness. By knowing that, we can infuse Krishna consciousness even into those activities which make us Krishna unconscious. So thank you very much. Is there anyone question? Yes.
Thank you for the most wonderful period of four Bhagavatam classes you've given us. Throughout the four Bhagavatam classes and any other lectures I've previously heard, is that you've given us the jnana, the knowledge, but you've given us jnana in such a way that we can devotionally apply. So when I read Srimad Bhagavatam or any of Prabhupada's books, it's just simply dry philosophy at some points. But how can you give me tips on how I can actually see the emotional content, the devotional content in there? So how can I apply it to my Krishna consciousness?
So how do we, when we study Shastra, sometimes it feels like dry jnana. So how do we infuse it with more emotional content? How can we apply the knowledge which we have for developing our relationship with Krishna? Yes? We all have to find out what stimulates spiritual emotion within us. And we focus on that. One of the best stimulants of spiritual emotion that I have found is Vaishnava songs. Vaishnava songs have a very beautiful blend of both philosophy and emotion. And the philosophy absorbs us intellectually and the emotion absorbs us mentally. Mind is the seat of emotion. And in that way, mai arpita mano buddhir, what Krishna tells repeatedly in the Bhagavad Gita, offer your mind and intelligence to me. That can be very easily done. Now, even the Sanskrit prayers are also infused with a lot of devotion. But sometimes the verses are complex and the mood is predominated with Aishwarya. So because of which the devotion may not be immediately apparent. So we can memorize songs, and we don't have to memorize full songs also. Even some one or two lines from a song which we like very much. You know, one of the lines which I quoted in an earlier class, I like from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, Atma Nivedan Duapade. Amito tomar, tumito amar, kikaja paradhani. It's one of my favorite lines. I am yours, you are mine. What else do I need, O Lord? So if we find some line from a prayer or a song or a scripture that resonates with us, we can just take that and cherish that and recite that. So similarly, this is so the Vaishnava songs are mostly in simpler language, Bengali or other sometimes in Hindi, mostly Bengali in our tradition. And because the emotion is more directly evident over there, we can more easily access Krishna. Connect with Krishna even using emotions. Along with that, we can also compose our own prayers. There are the Acharya's prayers, there are the scripture prayers given in scripture we should offer. But sometimes the tendency may be to hide behind those prayers. That means we just recite those prayers and we feel that I have done my part. No, those prayers are meant to infuse devotion. And if we can, if sometimes those prayers become mechanical, then we can try to have our own prayers, which we offer to the Lord. And if we are of a more introspective nature, then I have found journaling very helpful. So whatever are our concerns, we write them down. And then if I have journaled something that is worrying me, something that is troubling me, something that is agitating me, if I write that down, and my thoughts become more organized, and then when I come in front of the deities and pray, at that time my prayer also becomes more concentrated. Not just in terms of concentration when I'm offering prayer, but concentrated also in terms of the content. That it's, Krishna, please engage me in your service. That's a good prayer. But in general, emotions are evoked by specifics, not by universals. If I say, oh, an Indian has come here. Okay, maybe if I am an Indian and I like Indians, I may have some emotion. If I say, oh, an Indian from South India has come, it's more specific. If I am a South Indian, I'll be more attracted. But if you come to know, so-and-so person has come here, then because it's a specific person, if I like that person, the emotion will be invoked much more. So if we offer general prayer to Krishna, Krishna, please engage me in your service. It's a good prayer, but because it is so general, emotion may not be so invoked. But if we pray, Krishna, I'm going for book distribution today. You know, I wish to distribute this many books. Please help me. Then the more specific the prayer, the more emotion can be invested in it. And now, we shouldn't usually pray for Krishna. We can pray to Krishna that he give us a particular result. But we don't have to make the prayer like a demand. He says, Krishna, this is what I feel will be a wonderful service to you. So I would like to do this. But whatever is your will, let it happen. But please let me serve you enthusiastically in this particular service. So making our, when we are, I said, composing our own prayers basically means making our prayers specific to our context and our concerns. That evokes emotion. So another thing that we could do to bring bhava, emotion, into our devotion is to associate more with the devotees who have the kind of emotion that we can relate with. There are different devotees who are emotional in different ways also. Now some devotees may just do kirtans and they go into ecstasy in kirtans. And if we associate, if that's the kind of emotion we connect with, then we associate that kind of devotees. There are other devotees who are, you know, more they are of a different nature. So they are more subdued. But still, within that subdued nature, also there is intense devotion. So basically, we have to find out like-minded association, even with respect to the specific of the intense devotion. So different devotees are basically different. And many devotees may be very advanced, but whether we can relate with them, that is something which we'll have to find out. So by reciting Vaishnava songs, by composing our own specific prayers, and by associating with devotees who have the kind of emotion that we can connect with, we can also infuse our bhakti with devotion. Okay? Thank you very much. So thank you very much for your kind hospitality over the last few days and the wonderful services that all of you are doing here at the lotus feet of Yashoda Gopinath. So thank you very much, and please forgive any offenses that I may have committed. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Dai Gaur Premanande. Please accept my invitation.